purport. After the Prachetas had finished their penance, they were blessed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord blessed them by telling them that after finishing their family life, they would return home back to Godhead in due course. After finishing their family life, which lasted for thousands of years according to the calculations of the demigods, the Prachetas decided to leave home, putting their wife in charge of a son named Daksha. Thus, this is the process of Vedic civilization. In the beginning of life, as a brahmachari, one has to undergo severe penances and austerities in order to be educated in spiritual values. The brahmachari or student is never allowed to mingle with women and learns from the beginning of life about sex enjoyment. The basic flaw of modern civilization is that boys and girls are given freedom during school and college to enjoy sex life. Most of the children are vana sanskara, meaning, quote, born of undesirable mothers and fathers, end quote. Consequently, the whole world is in chaos. Actually, the human civilization should be based on Vedic principles. This means that in the beginning of life, boys and girls should undergo penance and austerity. When they are grown, they should get married, live for some time at home, and beget children. When the children are grown up, the man should leave home and search for Krishna consciousness. In this way, one can make one's life perfect by going home to the kingdom of Godhead. Unless one practices penance and austerity in his student's life, he cannot understand the existence of God. Without realizing Krishna, one cannot make his life perfect. The conclusion is that when the children are grown, the wife should be put in the children's charge. The husband may then leave home to develop Krishna consciousness. Everything depends on the development of mature knowledge. King Prachinibharishat, the father of the Prachetas, left home before the arrival of his sons, who were engaged in austerities within the water. As soon as the time is ripe, or as soon as one has developed perfect Krishna consciousness, he should leave home, even though all of his duties may not be fulfilled. Prachinibharishat was waiting for the arrival of his sons, but following the instructions of Narada, as soon as his intelligence was properly developed, he simply left instructions for his ministers to impart to his sons. Thus, without waiting for their arrival, he left home. Giving up a comfortable home life is absolutely necessary for human beings and is advised by Prahlad Maharaj. Hitvatam patam griham andakupam. To finish the materialistic way of life, one should leave his so-called comfortable home life, which is simply a means for killing the soul, atmapatram. The home is considered to be a dark well covered by grass, and if one falls within this well, he simply dies without anyone caring. One should therefore not be too much attached to family life, for it will spoil one's development of Krishna consciousness. Om Aginata Madandasya Gana Gana Salakaya Jakshusha Militandina Tazarishi Gurave Namaha. We are talking about perfect knowledge here, and that perfect knowledge being an impetus for action. I was sitting in a room with Srila Prabhupada one time, and a Sanskrit professor. And by the way, he's the same one who said that Srila Prabhupada, trying to impress Prabhupada with his saying, "Is it Krishna? Is it Krishna? Is it Krishna?" Prabhupada said, "Don't worry, he knows who's calling." So, Prabhupada was not too much impressed by this professor. But Prabhupada asked him, "Have you read Bhagavad Gita?" And the man said, "Of course." Prabhupada said, "Did you understand it?" And the man was, "What? I'm a Sanskrit professor. I read, of course I understood it." And then Prabhupada asked him, "So what are you going to do?" And at that point, you watched a blank look go over the man's face. And the idea that the Bhagavad Gita, the conclusion of Gita, was a call to action. That one was meant to change. What does it say? A revolution in the impious lives of a misguided civilization. That concept had never crossed the man's mind, that the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita was he was meant to do something, to change. So vijnana, realized knowledge, as described here, it's meant to activate a change. The knowledge of this world, knowledge determines how we see the world. Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, knowledge in the mode of goodness, knowledge in the mode of passion, knowledge in the mode of ignorances. Knowledge is influenced. But how we see the world is based on our particular concept of knowledge, how we see the world. If we understand that this world in the ultimate and constant issue is suffering. Prabhupada said, if I invite you to my house, and I say, Prabhu, please come, we'll have a very nice feast. What are your favorite preparations? Oh, definitely we'll make all of them, you know, just the way you like it. And that, but you know that just as you start to take that feast, there's a man hiding behind the door that's going to beat you with a stick. This is Prabhupada's example. Will you come very happily? Will you skip in the door and sit down? Very nice. No, you think, what is this? Just when I'm eating, someone's going to beat me with a stick? I'm not going in that house. But then we have to be intelligent. The devotees are called introspective sages. We're meant to have that bit of detachment. We'll get into that in a minute, but that's one of the benefits of austerity. We can stop and think, whoa, what is going on here? Let me give you an example, just to confirm what is the nature of this world, because the understanding the nature of this world is catalyst to look somewhere else. You follow? We need to look somewhere else. Now, well, I'll explain. I'll try. They say that a language is the manifestation of a society's consciousness and collective experience. I'll say that again. They say that a language is the manifestation of a particular, whatever group that's speaking that language, it's a manifestation of their experience. You follow? I'll give an example. Eskimos. You know who Eskimos are? Okay? Eskimos, they have something like 41 different words for snow. Because it is a very prominent part of their experience, isn't it? So they have all kinds of... Sanskrit has 21 different words, according to Dravida Prabhu, 21 different words for lotus. So it explains their experience, right? They're experiencing snow. It's a, you know, a major event in their life. The Jesuit missionaries, when they went to Japan, had a great difficulty translating the Bible, because the Shintoists and Buddhists, they have no word for a personal concept of God. The word does not exist in their language. It means it does not exist in their cultural experience. You follow? The other day, I was looking, and this is a homework exercise. Okay, ready for a homework exercise? Do a word search. Do a synonym. Go to a dictionary and look up synonyms for the word suffering. You will find dozens, hundreds in the English language, different flavors of suffering. I mean, anguish, you know, what is it? Agony, anguish, angst. It starts off and it goes on and on and on and on. And each of those you can click on and they give another whole other tree. You know, living nightmare. There's all kinds of things that go on and on. Now, given the setup of words in a language confirm the cultural experience, what can we understand if there's hundreds of words for suffering? I looked up happiness. There's far less for happiness. So what does that mean? That means it is the nature of our experience is suffering. We can understand that. That is our nature, natural state. The Prabhupada describes the symptoms of intelligence. Because, after all, man is called the rational animal, right? Prabhupada liked that saying. I was just saying the other day, they asked Prabhupada about evolution. I was in the room. Prabhupada said, you say you're coming from monkeys? He said, my ancestors are the great Vedic sages. And then Prabhupada said, what evolution? You're still monkeys. So it's a fact, you know. So animals. The question is about animals. And doubt and dissatisfaction. These sound like negatives, doubt and dissatisfaction. But unless there's a doubt, everyone is moving forward on the conveyor belt of materialistic life. They say, eat, drink, and be merry. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you may die. Not that you may die, you will die. They say, nothing is certain but death and taxes. So guaranteed you're going to die. So to simply eat, drink, and be merry is a fool's paradise. And the doubt, let me give an example. You never find, the elephant never says, what? Hay again? Every day hay? You know, why not some rascula? Why not some samosa? What's with the hay? You never find the sheep saying, grass? Again with grass? You know, why? They eat the same thing every day for generations. They have those birds in Mayapur who make a nest
you know, that kind of pendulum shape, that they take the branches or the ends of the, and then they tie them, and then they make a hanging like that pendulum shape. You never see one of those birds say, "What? Again with the pendulum? Hey, I'm making a dome." Said, "Hey, you know, I'm tired of my mother-in-law. I'm making a back porch for her to see." You know, they never. It's always the same. Human intelligence means to have a doubt, to be dissatisfied. Is this all there is in life? This titillating the senses? You know, is that all? Prabhupada was walking in Shevet Hills Park with Prajapati. And if you remember, Prajapati had that thespian voice. So you can hear on the tape, he says, Prabhupada would usually get out of the car and walk clockwise. This particular time, Prabhupada walked counterclockwise. And you hear on the tape, Prajapati says, "I say, Srila Prabhupada, when we walk in the park from a different direction and see all the objects from a different angle, it appears to be a brand new park." And you hear Prabhupada, you know, say, Prabhupada puts his cane down, and you hear Prabhupada, he really starts to laugh. And Prabhupada said, "This is material life. It is the same thing. It is eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But a little different body, a little different angle, and always, oh, it's brand new. But it is the same thing." So an intelligent person, he tries to find out what is the cause. All right, fine, what's behind this? What's caused by this? What's caused Sankhya Yoga, you know? This is caused by this, this is caused by this, this is... So what is the cause? What's behind everything? What is the cause of all causes? What is the ultimate reality? The materialists are doing the same thing in their own blunt, mechanistic way. You know they have the Hubble telescope. We're taking the two ends of the spectrum, from the biggest to the smallest. They recently awarded the Nobel Peace Prize to two physicists, and their addition, so-called, addition to the world of knowledge, field of knowledge, is that the universe is expanding at an incredible speed, a faster rate than anyone thought, which means all their theories of physics and everything that MIT and Caltech, at which IIT takes the dust, they are all completely bewildered. What does this mean? It throws off all their laws of physics. So on the large, and interestingly enough, in the 1930s, they also awarded the Nobel Peace Prize to the man who said that the world was contracting. It was called, you know, the Big Bang, it was called the Big Crunch. So they gave the Nobel Peace Prize in the 30s to the guy who said it's imploding, you know, contracting, and they gave the Nobel Peace Prize to the guy now who said, no, that's wrong, now it's getting bigger. So we should have a little bit of a doubt about there. You know, we'll accept Mahavishnu and all the universe. That's our opinion of things. One breathing, one inhale, and one exhale. But, so they're completely bewildered on looking at the bigger and bigger. And they had that, what is that super hadron? The atom smasher? Yeah? Just try and understand the premise of the thing. Suppose I was trying to figure out a gas combustion engine. And the way I did it was I got two cars, I ran them at 90 miles an hour into each other, bam! And then I sorted through all the pieces, the bent hubcap, the steering wheel, and I tried to figure out a gas combustion engine. You know, it's quite primitive and remote that it will find the truth. They're taking the smallest atoms, smallest particles, and they're smashing them into each other, and they're watching what comes out. And they're thinking that they'll figure out how the universe is put together. That's actually what's happening. At billions of dollars, with a B, billions of dollars. Tax dollars at work. This is way off the track, but Sataputta Prabhu, one of the great heroes of our society, like they say, do the numbers. Sataputta got the numbers of what the nine industrial nations, top industrial nations, spend on defense per year. He reduced that to what they spend in 1 minute. What they spend, the nine top industrial nations, this was back in the, whatever it was, in the 80s, what they spend on defense, he called it defense, but it means dropping bombs on innocent children, but what they spend, when you, in 1 minute, just the nine top industrial nations, you could put on 100,000 Rathayatras every day. Of the size of Los Angeles, we used $70,000, $80,000 as the figure. So can you imagine the impact on this planet if you could put on, we can't even think of 100,000 cities. Can you imagine if we could put on a rock theater the size of LA in 100,000 cities every single day? Imagine the impact. Anyway, they're just lighting money on fire. Prabhupada said they're like children playing. But with this super collider, it's this thing smashing, you know, they, neutrinos flew out, and they've now, they think that they flew faster than the speed of light. They have to reconfirm. Everyone's afraid that it's true, because if it's true, it means all of their theories of physics are wrong. Their whole concept of the universe, they just have to chuck. Anyone ever heard of dark matter? Dark matter is 90% of the matter in the universe, they say. Because there's different, you know, the planets are all at different distances and moving. It's a whole, the way the universe is held together. All of that is by gravitational force. And for that gravitational force, there is a certain amount of matter required. They can't find 90% of it. Maybe it's 80%. I've forgotten the figure. Fine, let's go with 80%. I believe it's 90%. They cannot find 90% of the matter in the universe. It's a fudge factor to make their theories work. That's why they call it dark matter, because nobody's seen it. Suppose I owe you $1,000. I give you $100. Say, okay, fine, we're done. You say, whoa, where's the other 900? Don't worry, it's there. They're just dark dollars. Great, I hope I meet you on Sankirtan someday, you know? So the simple point I'm trying to make is that they are also trying to find out the cause of all causes. They are thinking that there's something beyond our mundane experience. But they're going about it in the wrong way. If I try to go to the moon in one of the, do you have helium balloons, those air balloons in India? Suppose I get in one of those and I want to go to the moon with that. You know about the Polish moonshot space program? The Polish space program, they've concluded they're going to go to the sun. Everyone said, you can't go to the sun. You'll burn up. They said, no, we're going to go at night. So, they're like that. Frankly, it is just like that. The Brahma is the first created being. When Brahma says, sarva karana karanam, that comes within a profound context of Sankhya Yoga. This is caused by this. This is caused by this. What is the cause of all causes, the ultimate reality? Ishwara Paramakrishna Satchidananda Vigraha Ananda Arigovinda Sarva Karana Karanam. Brahma is the first living being. You know the Hansa avatar, the swan incarnation? Four Kumaras are there. Brahma's there. They're thinking that Brahma, like Narada Muni said, you hold everything like with a nut, like a walnut within your hand, or like a spider, everything emanates from the spider's abdomen. So Narada, four Kumaras, they're thinking that Brahma is the cause of all causes. All of a sudden, the Hamsa avatar appears on the scene. The four Kumaras asked a profound question. Lord Brahma asked a profound question that immediately turned the four Kumaras to transcendence. Does anyone know the question that Lord Brahma asked the Hamsa avatar? Is that, who are you? And what did the four Kumaras conclude? If all forms, picture a triangle. If all forms with Brahma at the top, if all forms that we experience in this creation flow from Lord Brahma, how is there a form that Brahma does not understand? He's the source of all forms. Therefore, if Brahma is asking, who are you? There must be a form, and therefore a reality, that is beyond you. Four Kumaras immediately turn to transcendence from hearing this question. So, our simple point is that it talks in this purport about the necessity of tapasya. We need to cut the cord from material nature. Anyone here ever try to cut an eggplant with a dull knife? You ever try to cut an eggplant with a dull knife? You know, you need a sharp knife if you're going to cut. If we are, the average American, USA, under hypnosis, can remember over 357 commercial jingles. Advertisement slogans. like best and cheapest, or, you know, whatever it is, Coke is the real thing, or Nike, just do it. No, better you think about it before you do it, but that's another issue, you know? So, but 357 commercials average are in the brain. You know, they said to Prabhupada, this chanting is brainwashing. Prabhupada said, if the brain is dirty, shouldn't it be washed? You know? So all of that is rattling around in the brain. We are based on stimulus response. You go to the doctor gives you a shot in the posterior. Oh! Here's a sucker, here's a lollipop, here's a little whatever you call it in India. Oh, not so bad. And we're conditioned like that. Suffering, and we get a little relief. We're itching, we're scratching. Oh, it's not so bad. But it is a fool's paradise. Therefore, one needs to, as it's describing here, one needs to practice tapasya. Prabhupada said, the measure of a man's strength, or person's strength, man or woman, a measure of their strength is what? How far they can jog, how much they can lift weights. They're at UCSD, University of California, San Diego, one of the top hard science schools in the world, in front of Harvard in a number of divisions. They have a guy who's a, you know, nuclear biologist, whatever, studies the nature of the cells within the body. He has a theory that you're going to live to 120 years old if you eat right, if you exercise, if you take oxygenated water. He's got a whole theory. He was out, he at 65 years old, he has the pulse rate of someone who's 40. Hey, sounds like it's working, right? He was out jogging about a month ago, was looking at the women's volleyball team and hit by a bus and killed. You know, we all have our karma and destiny. It's set. You cannot cheat the material nature. So my simple point is this. What is the measure of a man's strength? How far he can jog? How much weight he can lift? What is the measure of a man's strength according to the Bhagavatam? The ability to tolerate. The ability to tolerate. Prabhupada said about the Gurukula, he said the best thing a parent can do is teach the child to tolerate. I mean, you have to give them unlimited love and affection and shelter and warmth, all of that. But the understanding of this material nature, what is it, matasmarsha tukonteya? It's, you know, satoshin sukadukada. That's the nature. Tangsa tikshava bharata, one has to tolerate. Because that's the nature of this place. That is the greatest gift, and it's describing it here. I'll give you another example, because I'm just looking at the time. I was flying for our BBT one time from New York to Puerto Rico. Now, in the New York airport, JFK, there were big advertisements. And it said, going nuts in this city. Cacophony of noise, confusion, chaos, pressure. Ah, just go to Puerto Rico. And had a picture of a beautiful beach with a nice aquamarine water and the palm trees. You know, just you could think, ah, let me go. Okay, fine. When I arrived in Puerto Rico, before I even got out of the airport, there were big advertisements of the New York skyline. And it said, going nuts on this little island with nothing to do, go to New York. So I remember scratching my head and thinking, hang on a sec here. It's about 6,000 miles, so, you know, three over Atlanta City? I mean, where was the happiness at 35? Because I missed it. You know, was it somewhere in the middle? Because I flew right past it. The point is that happiness does not depend on conditions. What is the nature of this world described by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita? It is constantly mutable. Therefore, if your happiness is depending on conditions, as we used to say when I was a young man in California, you are cruising for a bruising. Because if your happiness depends on conditions and the inherent nature of conditions is to change, what will happen to your happiness? But if one's happiness is based on one's consciousness, instead of conditions, consciousness. We saw Srila Prabhupada on his disappearance bed. Dr. Karana, who was a life member, Prabhupada stayed at his house in Delhi, a very nice man. He came with a number of doctors. And Dr. Karana was a very reserved man. He told me later on, when he came to see Srila Prabhupada, he came with a number of doctors just to see if they could do anything to help Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada was lying like Bhishma Dev on a bed of arrows. Dr. Karana told me that there was no fatty tissue. The skin was pushing the bones, the nerves, right onto the bones. An ordinary man would have been writhing in pain or full of morphine. Prabhupada asked for a little massage.
When Dr. Khurana walked in the room, he's a doctor. He's usually consoling people, or they're grabbing onto his arm and saying, "Doc, give me 6 more months," you know? When Dr. Khurana walked into the room, he saw Prabhupada in this condition. And Prabhupada asked, "How is your family? How are you? You must have traveled a long distance. You've come from Delhi. You must be tired." He said to whoever was there in charge, "Please get them some prasadam, take a little rest, come back later and we'll talk." Dr. Khurana began to cry. He could not believe that such a person in such a condition was simply thinking about his welfare, someone else's welfare. It was inconceivable. So, I mean, we could go on and on and on. That we've seen so many devotees leaving this world in very difficult conditions, and they're simply remembering Krishna. Like, what is it? Like, there's a coconut husk, and there's the pulp inside, and you can rattle them. They're independent of each other. We've seen devotees that are completely independent of their material condition. We don't have time to go into it, but there's so many examples. So if one's happiness is depending on conditions, then we are going to suffer perpetually. If one's happiness depends on consciousness, Patram pushpam palam toyam, we can say a little leaf, a fruit, a flower, what you offer to Krishna. Who can't do that, Prabhupada says? If you can't even do that, you can fold your hands and cry, and Krishna will completely accept that offering. So there should be a sense of urgency. This life is actually very short. I was in the room one time. A man said to Prabhupada, it's not uncommon, the wife was very pious and the man was quite materialistic. And he was completely agitated. His wife obviously had dragged him there, and he wanted to go home and watch something on television or play cricket or who knows what. So the man was agitated. And Prabhupada noticed it. Prabhupada said to him, "You have somewhere to go? What is the issue?" The man said, "I'm late. I have a very important appointment, and I'm late." Prabhupada said to him, "You have only one appointment and you will not miss it." You know what that appointment is? Time of death. We can say to Yamaraj, "No, never. This never work for you?" No. Yamaraj will come at his own time, at his own place. Even in the Bible, it says that death will come like a thief at night. We don't know. What's the guarantee? Our man with life extension thought he was going to 120, was smacked by a bus. So I guess we'll say this, because I'm looking at the time factor. There's a very nice example by Bhakti Purushottam Maharaj that I use quite often. It's a great example. And it's mentioned here about this well. So a man is walking in a field, and he falls into a well, a covered well, right? And as he's falling, he's naturally grabbing, and he grabs onto something. And then as the light clears, he notices that he's fallen into this well, and at the bottom of the well is a giant cobra saying, come on down. He looks up, there's a tiger looking over the well saying, come on up, you're a nice snack item, come on up. And then he notices that he's holding onto roots that have grown out the side of the well, and there's a white rat gnawing through one and a black rat gnawing through the other. Okay? But then he looks up, and there's a branch over the well, and there's a beehive, and a little bit of honey is drop, and he thinks, not so bad. The serpent is time. The lion is Durga, Adiatmak, Adi Bhotak, Adi Daivak, and she's got a trident. Radharani has a nice lotus. No, she's got a trident. You decide who you want to surrender to. So, and then the roots, black and white, daytime and nighttime, eating through our existence. Time and tide wait for no one. And the honey dropping, we get a little bit of happiness. We think, oh, not so bad. Prabhupada was sitting in Boston. He was watching this bird hopping, and it was winter time. Somehow the bird hadn't gotten the memo to migrate, or whatever it is. So Prabhupada said, and it's cold, it's snow. And there were a few patches that the snow had melted on a lawn. Prabhupada said, actually this bird would kill itself. He's suffering so much. Freezing cold and hungry.
But every now and then it finds a little bug or a little grain and thinks, oh, not so bad. And in this way it is slogging on. We are the exact same condition. The We have to perform tapasya. We have to, we are in Janmaishvaya Shruti Shri Bir? Kunti Dev says, we are intoxicated. Otherwise, if we were not, if one's intoxicated, one can tolerate great pain. My parents had a party one time, many, many years ago. A man, Mr. Shackford, I remember, got completely drunk and fell off a second-story balcony into a rose garden. You can imagine the man's condition, you know, into a rose garden, falling, and he's, oh, everybody, he was singing, everything was fine, you know. My parents were concerned, they had me go see him the next day. Oh, he was all bandaged and scratched and couldn't get out of bed. So when he was intoxicated, he didn't realize his actual state. You follow? We are all, actually, this world is not a nice place. I'm sorry, Prabhus. It's just not a nice place. That's the nature of it. So, let me ask you this. We are all praying. What is it? God, give us our daily bread. Or Om Jaya Jagadish Hari, give me a new car and a house by the sea. You know, we all have our prayers. Suppose I give you $100. Here, Prabhu, here's $100. You think, hey, visit more often, right? Then you talk to your other friends, you found out I gave each of them $1,000. Hang on a minute. You know, from thinking I'm your new best friend, all of a sudden you think, well, what's with that? How come he didn't give me $1,000, you know? Although the dollar amount you received is the same, by comparison, it appears negligible, isn't it? The happiness of the spirit soul, Brahmaputta Prasanatma Nasojate, what to speak, Shantaras, what to speak of the progressive rasas, of actually being in association of devotional service with Krishna. Imagine that happiness. What we're at, Dhruva Maharaj says, it is broken glass and you've given me a jewel. Srila Prabhupada was, we have our austerities. You have to practice austerity. But if we think about it for a moment, the austerity, by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what are our austerities? We have to get up early in the morning, we have to follow the four regulative principles, we have to chant japa. These things are sweet. Getting up in the morning and taking a bath and following the four regulative principles just means that you're a human being. It just means you've come off the Dvipada Pashu platform. So they asked Prabhupada one time, what do you do for recreation? You know, we have no frivolous sports. Prabhupada looked, he said, our whole movement is recreation. I went, when my father retired at 75 years old from his company, everyone is there in suits and ties, and tuxedos, it's a big deal, right? I'm there, Dodi Tilak, like that. I'm his youngest son. So he's making his address, and he says, you know, I've worked all my life since I was 8 years old. I had a paper route. Now I built up my own company, and now I'm finally retiring. I'm 70. It's a wonderful thing. You're all praising me. He said, actually, my youngest son is more intelligent. Everyone looked, why? Devotee. He said, he retired at 17 and a half. He joined the Hare Krishna movement. And I've been playing ever since, you know. Actually, chant, dance, take prasad. I mean, we have to be serious. Ours is serious business, no doubt. But if we, by the grace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it has become so nice. Let me leave you with one story, because we have to end. Actual event, and the reason I'm telling this is to give an idea of the simple simplicity. It doesn't require, what is it, Bhavagrihi Janardhanam, that Krishna knows what's in our heart. It requires our heartfelt relationship with Krishna. Anyone in any we had a guy, his name was Irving, and he had a drinking problem. He moved into the temple, couldn't give it up, this and that, right? I'm going to tell another story, but this one is just a sideline. So we met, Gunagrai Marj and I, every Sunday the San Diego Temple goes out to this nice park and sets up a pandal and prasadam and chants, right? So we're there chanting, we're standing by the book table, and Irving comes up. And as Prabhu would say, he's obviously not quite in order. He's got his pants inside out and backwards, and he's, you know, all disheveled. And He smells like a brewery. If you lit a stick of incense, you would have self-emulated, you know. So, and hacking and coughing from, cigarette smoking. So, and he'd been a happy devotee. So we said, Irving, what happened? Please start chanting. No, I can't chant. We said, Irv, at least take a bath. We said, well, where are you living? He was living in the women's bathroom in the park. Gunagrai Marsh said, at least move to the men's bathroom. He could do that. He could make some. So wherever we're at, we can make some step. But what I really meant to say is, whatever we do, any position, a humble offering to Krishna, our life, our service, our remembrance of some pastime or lila, or by serving him, by preaching, delivering his message, Krishna is so easily pleased and wants to be pleased. So, here's the story about the sweet, simple taste of bhakti. Prabhupada was in Detroit. Practically every temple president east of the Mississippi River had come. And they had all, and understandably so, rightly so, had purchased beautiful flowers for making big garlands, big marigold garlands, or big, gardenia, plumeria from Hawaii. You've seen those pictures of Prabhupada covered with, we've all seen so many garlands are there. So Prabhupada was covered with all these garlands. You could only see his head like this. The New Vrindavan devotees, Kirtananda was in charge, never gave them a dime. He said if they needed money, they'll figure out how to get it. If they don't figure out how to get the money, it meant they really didn't need it. So they had no money. They're coming to see Srila Prabhupada, driving 6-hour drive, New Vrindavan to Detroit. They picked whatever flowers they could find on the road. Simply wildflowers. We say wildflowers in America, but just whatever was growing on the side of the road without any cultivation. So they had this little garland. They didn't know what was the other scene of these big gigantic. They showed up, they're in the temple room, they have their little garland, and they see all, it's like Sudam Brahmana, they saw all these big garlands, how Krishna is being worshipped in Dwarka. They were so embarrassed, they hid their garland. Prabhupada, who never missed a trick, or, an event, Prabhupada saw that, called them forward. They didn't want to come. He said, Prabhupada called. He took off all the big garlands and gave them away. He took that little garland, he put it on, and he said, forest flowers, just like Radharani makes for Krishna. And that's the garland he wore. So my simple point is that this world, we are all trying to become happy with conditional happiness, and it is petty, paltry, putrid. I could go on with P's for a long time, then I'll move to Q's, and I'll move to R. That is the nature of happiness in this world. And the alternative is a little simple austerity. And any kind of service you want, that you can serve in different rasas, different places. You don't get along with this temple president, go here, go there. You're not happy in this part of the boat, get on that part. Prabhupada said it doesn't matter whether you're the stern or the bow or the top of the mast or in the bilge. When the boat arrives in the harbor, you get in the harbor. If we just serve in ISKCON, peacefully and simply do some nice, simple service for Krishna, we will taste that bhakti taste, that bhakti ras, and arrive at the lotus feet of Krishna. What's not to love? Hare Krishna. Glory to Srila Prabhupada. We have to end. Thank you very much. Harpo.
See you later, Prabhu.
I gotta go.
What year was that trip to Detroit that you just got in? That was not 1970, right?
No. It was because it was at Jefferson.
Because I came in 1970.
No, it had to be 73, 74.
The